Hey, soccer fans and SO peeps, this is Nick coming to you from SOP Soccer Central. We are back from our international break. It is Monday, June 13th. We're going to be talking a little MLS, a lot of MLS, and a little CONCACAF Nations League, as well as some international USMNT talk. It is great to be back talking with you all again, and despite the hoarse voice I have here, I'm pretty sure this is God just telling me to stop yelling at the TV, yelling at soccer games, screaming, bothering my family and my neighbors, but it's not going to stop me from doing the show tonight, so I appreciate you bearing with me. Also, it's just great to be back and to see everyone who's jumping on the stream with us and listening along on the podcast. I was out last week, took the family down to South Carolina, spent a few days on Folly Beach, couple days walking the historic roads of Charleston. Tried to get in Charleston Battery game, but you know, I just don't think my kids could have hanged that late. But man, we missed a banger of a game. It was a 4-3 victory, I think, for the Battery over Indy 11. So next time I'm anywhere near Charleston, the Battery are going to be on my list of events to go see. But like I said, tonight we are going to talk MLS scores and news, of course, and there's a lot of news. We're also going to take a little bit of a look at the New England Revolution, my team profile for the week, and then some CONCACAF Nations League and international friendlies. But before we do all that, make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, share the link, share the channel with all your friends, soccer and otherwise. Follow along on Twitter at SOP Soccer. And if you like what I do, follow along my channel at Wife Kids House on Twitter. And remember, keep the super chats coming, keep those donations and paid subscriptions coming. Got to keep my boss happy, got to keep Mike happy. You all know Mike, Mr. SOP himself. And hey, if you got any topics that you want to hear us discuss on next week's show, or if you want to get your photo on the show, on the stream, from a game, from something soccer related, go ahead and email that to us at sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. And I hope you all have your full drinks, because here we go. Hey everyone, Nick again with SOP Soccer Central, and it's great to see our lineup is already filling in so early in the show. Red Bull Insider is here. What is up? You are right. There's very interesting stuff going on in the American soccer world. We got brother BKL Contreras, our very own Sportertainment guy. Hey, Nick P and fam. Hey, brother BKL. Connor Knows Soccer is back again. Connor, always great to have you with us. And for all of you Columbus Crew fans, go find Connor's channel on YouTube. He is giving you tons of content over there. Watch alongs, Crew 2 recaps, all that good stuff. Jay Jardine, what is up, man? I missed you last week. Did you catch the TFC update? That was just for you, my friend. I was talking too much Montreal and Vancouver, so I had to give you some TFC love. And congratulations on the Canadian championship from 2 years ago, the 2020 championship that TFC just won. We even have Dan Gehringer here. Good evening, Dan. Great to have you with us. And let's see who else jumped in. Bernardo Labrada, 13 videos. Hey, what's up, bro? How are you? How's life? Life is good, man. I am here with everybody talking soccer, and it's fantastic, right? All right, Dan, appreciate the chat here, letting me know. I got some technical things going on. Hopefully that has done it a little better. Like I said, my voice is a little hoarse from yelling at all these games, all these matches. So hopefully it sounds a little better now, and we can get right into our conversation. So I love having you all here with us on the chat. We're looking out for each other. That's it. So as we do every week, we are going to start off with a recap of a few of the MLS games that did take place over this international break, week 15. It is Vancouver 2, RSL 1, back on June 4th. 9 days ago. We got to take it back. International break here. So a good win for Vancouver over an RSL team that is definitely outperforming what I think their skill level and talent level are. Also, Charlotte gets the new coach bump. They defeat Red Bull New York 2-0 on June 10th. And is everyone familiar by now with what was going on in Charlotte? What happened with the coaching there? The Cliff Notes version is that their coach, Miguel Ramirez, did not get along with the front office, lost the locker room. made some comments about how we're not going to be good if we don't get any new players. And so some of the players, their high-profile DP is the only thing we know, refused to play with them. Everyone is pretty sure that that was Karel Svrderski. And so this is surprising that they had to fire him halfway through his first season, given how high they were on him. But they do bring in interim coach Christian Latanzio, who actually has a decent pedigree. He's been a youth coach for Man City, New York City here in MLS, as well as Nice over in Ligue 1 in France. And this is his first major pro head coaching gig. So good luck to Christian Latanzio. Let's see if he can get Charlotte to kind of level out and get some consistent results here. To round out the MLS games, Nashville draws San Jose 0-0 just over this past weekend. I got to say, it's as exciting of a game as you're going to get for a 0-0 draw. You don't have Walker Zimmerman playing for Nashville. Obviously, he's out with USMNT. You had San Jose had some chances. Cade Cowell actually looked really good, taking it to that Nashville back line. But again, the real quality in that final third, that final finishing touch, was lacking on both sides. A 0-0 draw, Nashville-San Jose. And then the most recent game, Sporting Kansas City, trying to use the international break to get healthy, but they are not. Trying to maybe see if they can make some noise in the MLS season, but I think they're just going to kind of scrap the MLS season and just go all in on the Open Cup. They end up losing at home to New England 2-1, and New England gets back in the win column. And because of that, not only because they were one of the few games, but because of how odd of a season it's been for New England, they are my team profile for tonight. So everyone who's in the chat, and for those listening on the podcast, Monday nights, 8 p.m. Central, make sure you jump over on Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central YouTube, and we get all of your live comments and conversation and chat going over here. So New England is my profile. So for everyone in the chat, what do you think about New England? What's going wrong? Because it seems like not is going right for them, considering that they set the points record last season. Now, New England, when I put these notes together yesterday, was sitting in 11th place in the Eastern Conference. And with the victory over New England, they are now in 8th place. So let's look at their record and their goals, right? They have a 4-5-4 record. They have 22 goals scored, but their expected goals say only 18.6. So they are actually outperforming their goals scored. So if they're outperforming, then why don't they have a better record, right? Why are they at just under, well, now they're about 500 in the league. Now, part of it is defense. They have conceded 23 goals this season, even though their expected goals allowed only says 16.1. So they're definitely not at that goal differential. They're not outscoring the opponents as the models would predict, especially if they're outperforming on the goals scored, right? Other things to look at. Matt Turner's been out for most of the season, but defense is a bigger problem, not just goalkeeping, according to the advanced numbers. You guys know I like looking at numbers because I can't watch every game all the time. I like the numbers, and it kind of guides my eye test when I do get a chance to watch these teams. So, yes, Matt Turner and the goalkeepers for New England, their overall goalkeeping statistics are down. They are definitely underperforming compared to last year, but New England's defense, their back line, has been giving up much higher percentage shots to opposing teams than they had last year. So again, teams are getting much better quality opportunities against New England. So as good as a goalkeeper is, if you're going to give up those shots from inside the 10-yard area, if you're going to be giving up high quality shots, tons of set pieces, crosses coming in, there's only so much even a good goalkeeper can do. And I think that does show the numbers here, right? It does show that last season, this New England team allowed 41 goals, about 1.2 per game. This season, they've already allowed 23 goals, about 1.77 per game. So their defense has been underperforming this year compared to last year, which again, to be fair, it was a record-setting point season, but to go from the best team in the East, the best regular season of all time, to way below the playoff line, there's things that are going wrong, right? So the defense is part of it. The other part of it, obviously, is the offense. They lost a lot of offense when they transferred Tajon Buchanan. Just how much, you ask? That's a great question. Let me answer it for you. Tajon last season had 8 goals and 5 assists, but also had 3.6 expected assists, which, you know, the pass before the pass, the hockey assist kind of, right? So you're losing about 16 or so goal contributions from Tajon if you go out to that second assist statistic, right? So that's a lot of offense. Now they also are losing Adam Buxa. He was transferred to RC Lens of France's League One just recently. And in his tenure with New England, he was scoring about every other game. I think he had something around 29 goals in 64 appearances or something like that for New England. So they're losing a lot of offense. Additionally, their reigning MVP of the league, Carlos Hill, has only played in four games this season. Maybe he played against New England if he's back, but prior to that, played against Kansas City, excuse me. But prior to that game, he had only had four appearances. So you've lost one of your best defenders in your goalkeeper, Matt Turner. You've lost one of your best attacking players in Tajon Buchanan. Your MVP is non-existent this season due to injury. So the offense has just kind of fallen out, right? So they have had a lot to deal with defensively and offensively in the season. So it shouldn't really come as a surprise that New England is playing so bad. But what have they done to address that? They, like I said, with this win over Kansas City, they're now back in the eighth spot. They're 1 point off the playoff line, and we'll take a look at the standings in a second. But what have they done to address this, right? They had already signed Jozy Altidore prior to the season beginning, and a lot of people thought he was either a depth piece who was going to help them with CONCACAF Champions League, and everyone kind of assumed Adam Buxa was going to be sold at some point during the season, and Jozy would slot in for that. But really, I think Jozy Altidore is a Band-Aid, and he is not a long-term solution, and I don't think you can ride Jozy for half a season and a playoff run, just given his age, the miles that are on his legs, and his injury history. Jay, you know that better than anybody being a big TFC fan, right? So what else has New England done to kind of set them up for now the second half of the season for replacing those players that we talked about, right? And Turner going to Arsenal soon. They signed Serbian goalkeeper Jordi Petrovic from Serbian side Karčiki. I'm not going to pretend to know Serbian at all, but again, he had been playing at the Serbian top flight. They also signed Colombian winger Dylan Barrero, which is a U22 initiative deal, and he was most recently with Brazil's club Atlético Mineiro, so no small club there. Also, Bruce Arena said in a recent interview that the Revs will be very active this transfer window, but will spend the money wisely. Okay, so let me kind of talk about that comment, and then we'll get some of your comments that have just been coming fast and furious in the chat over here, right? What Arena said does not give me much confidence. As Revs fans know that they haven't had a big history of spending a lot of money on players, right? It was great to see this last couple seasons, Hill, Bo, Buxa, bringing in some of these guys, right? But you got $10 million from the sale, from the transfer of Adam Buxa to Rennes, right? So you've got $10 million. Are they going to use that now and say, hey, we don't have to be that conservative club anymore? Are they going to use that and say, let's go out and get a DP? And I think if they can keep steadily improving in their standings, then they will go out and try and sign that DP. But as Arena said, we're going to spend it wisely. So they are either not going to spend it at all and just sit on it until the winter transfer and make a run next year, or they are going to only sign that big name DP if it's the one or two guys that they had been targeting. And from his other quotes and other recent interviews, there are a couple specific players that they've been targeting. If they can't get that DP, I would expect them then to go maybe sign a couple three players with that transfer money just to add depth to their roster. And given how tight the window is in the East, that I think there's only a handful of points between the leading teams and those just below the playoff line. Also, Cincinnati, Charlotte, Miami, I'm pretty sure are going to drop off at some point. I really hope that New England goes out and makes that big signing and really does feel like they can push up the table. Because, man, when New England is spending money, when teams are spending money, when you're getting high-profile players, it's more entertaining for us, the fans, and it increases the product. It definitely helps the league as a whole. So that's my quick profile on what New England is right now, where they've struggled, what we're going to look forward to in the future. So let's take a look at some of your comments that have come in on New England. Brother BKL, in my opinion, New England is keep fighting back without Josie with them. My idea, need to keep trying and don't worry about them. Yep, I think that's a good point, that they are going to have to play their best regardless of what Josie is or isn't, and you can't rely on him. Red Bull Insider says, sack Bruce. He is a fraud. He is bringing the team down. Last year, their lineup had much more quality. So they did have a higher quality last season, no doubt about that. And we talked about some of the notable names that have departed. I don't know if you can call Bruce Arena a fraud, given his history with not only MLS clubs, but also on the international level. He definitely hits plateaus. He definitely will hit a peak at some point and then kind of tail off. I hope he hasn't already hit it, especially after how he kind of had to rebuild the culture of that club after Brad Friedel departed. But we'll see. I'm not going to pass any judgment on Bruce until we see what happens this transfer window and how he adjusts to the loss of all his talented players. Next up, Soccer Mason 123 says, yo, Soccer Mason, it's great to have you back in the chat, man. How have you been? What games have you been watching? How are you enjoying everything this international break? Let's see. Dan Gehringer says, Buxa is a huge loss for them. Absolutely, he is a huge loss. The goals he's been scoring, the reliability of him, I think he's played in just about every match he's been available for, which you're not going to get with Josie, and you're not going to get almost with Hill and Boo. They've been starting to have some nagging injuries, right? So that has been an issue, and Buxa has been Mr. Reliable for them. So hopefully they sign a guy with a similar profile to Adam Buxa. Brother BKL adds, New England need to find a way to win without Josie. Absolutely. And Connor Knows Soccer that says, so you're saying there's a chance for us to make the playoffs if Cincy and Charlotte drop out of those playoff spots. Connor, the Eastern Conference is so tight, I wouldn't put it by any team right now in that conference. Let's take a look at the standings, and we will see exactly what I'm talking about. Right now, you've got NYC at the top of the table, and we're going to get into some NYC news. Philly, Montreal, and the Red Bulls round out the top four. Now, 26 to 23 points there. 5, 6, and 7, Orlando, Charlotte, Cincinnati are at 21 and 19 and 19 points. New England is at 19. Miami is at 18, and Columbus sits at 16. So if Columbus can go on a little bit of a run or just stay consistent, right, do the basics, win some home games, draw some road games, I do see them getting ahead of Miami and Cincinnati and probably Charlotte, depending on how Latanzio, Charlotte's new coach, can handle things. Maybe Charlotte is in the thick of it till decision day. Everyone in MLS circles is saying that Cincinnati is way outperforming any of their statistical models, and at some point they're going to have that regression to the mean, right? So Columbus is right there in the thick of things. Again, the playoff line right now is 19 points. Looking below Columbus, Atlanta 16, Toronto 15, DC 14, and Chicago 11. I'm still not going to count out the Chicago Fire because I'd be a terrible Chicago fan if I didn't always have ridiculous amounts of hope going into each season. But you know what? I just saw Zerdan Shaqiri got injured in his international game, his UEFA Nations League game. Hopefully it's not serious. Hopefully he was just subbed out as a precaution, but we'll get more news from that as the days go on here this week. So that's the standings. So yes, Connor, I think Columbus can make or push up that table. I think New England is poised to make a run up that table depending on their signings this summer window. And we will see then if anyone can, you know, push into maybe that four or five spot. Now let's look at some other MLS news that is going on. I mentioned NYCFC, right? They have a new head coach. Well, new interim head coach, Ronnie Dyla, has left NYCFC. And this kind of came out of nowhere. It was very unexpected, and there was a lot of flurry of activity on Twitter with people trying to figure out what was going on. The latest article that I read over on MLSsoccer.com said that he was trying to work out an extension with New York City. They wanted him. He wanted to stay, but they couldn't get the numbers worked out, right? It was just kind of a business thing. No personal issues here. No Charlotte FC scenarios. So when they couldn't get those issues worked out, Standard Liège, a club over in Belgium's top flight, brought in a low seven-figure offer and triggered his release clause. And Dyla had to make a choice whether to continue to try and work something out with New York City or make the jump to Belgium. And he ended up making the jump to Belgium. So that means for NYC, Nick Cushing will be the interim head coach. He's actually been with City Football Group since 2008 and was Manchester City's women's manager from 2013 to 2020. And from what the article suggested, he just did a bang-up job and did really well for that women's program. He's been with NYCFC ever since in 2020. So I don't expect this to really affect their on-the-field play that much, if at all, because it's a consistent system with consistent coaches. So NYCFC is going to continue their run and still, I think, is my favorite to win the Eastern Conference. Now, looking at a couple other headlines, and then we'll get to some more of your great comments, everyone here in the chat. Love seeing it. Some older news already. Real Madrid, if you haven't heard, you know, that giant club that just won the Champions League. Yeah, Real Madrid made an offer for Chicago Fire goalkeeper Gaga Slonina, and Chicago turned them down. They actually presented a counter offer. And people are just up in arms about this. Like, how do you turn down Real Madrid? How could you not sign this deal? You're getting millions for a young goalkeeper. Like, you've done nothing. Like, you're just making millions. He's only been your starting keeper for, you know, less than a full season. Like, what are you doing? You take the deal. You make the trade. You work with a club like this. I think it's all ridiculous talk, right? Chicago is doing the absolute right thing. First of all, you never take the first offer, right? Negotiations 101. Secondly, Chicago has arguably the best young goalkeeper in the world. If Real Madrid and also Chelsea was linked to Slonina at some point as well as some other major European clubs, they've got the best young goalkeeper in the world, arguably. So they can dictate the terms to a certain extent, even to a club like Real Madrid. Also, Chicago is trying to do what is best for Gaga, right? They don't want to see him get transferred to Real Madrid and then get loaned around or ride the bench or go down to like a second or third division in Spain and play there. They want to make sure that whatever move he makes, he's going to be playing. Whether that's a sign and a loan back or there's an understanding that he will get loaned to another club and start for another club and maybe a lesser league in Europe. But they got to make sure they look out for his interests. And honestly, he can still develop a lot here in MLS for another season or two. The kid's only 18, I think. Did he turn 18 yet? Maybe he's still 17. I don't know when his birthday is. I try not to stalk players, especially minors like that. Also, what I think is an interesting kind of point that I'm making, and let me know if anyone else agrees or if you've heard of this. Clubs like Real Madrid have almost artificially inflated player transfer fees with all the things that they've done, and it shot themselves in the foot, right? Like, if they're going to go out and sign a player for hundreds of millions of euros or hundreds of millions of pounds or dollars, whatever the unit of money is, it's an insane amount, right? Like, you're paying 80, 90, $100 million transfer fees. Well, why would Chicago settle for what's rumored to be like a $3 or $4 million deal for Slonina, right? They've got the best young goalkeeper in the world. Why would you not take anything less than a double-digit transfer fee? $10 million, $12 million, maybe some incentives, maybe some loan back stuff, whatever. So I think that some of these major, major clubs in Europe have kind of done what Major League Baseball has done, where it's like, we're going to give a pitcher $1 million deal and then turn around and say, well, we can't pay you this. Other players, like, this is ridiculous. So they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. Let me know what you think about that, fans. Let's look at a few comments over here on those topics, right? Oh, Brother BKL says, plus Leeds is interested in Tati Castellanos in the summer. Though my mind, it must be Dyla going back to Europe and Tati is the next step. Not a bad thought, Brother BKL. Yeah, I did see that Leeds is rumored to be signing Tati, which would just be fantastic. It's like every MLS fan, Leeds would be their premiership team, right? With Jesse March coaching, Brennan Aaronson, just getting transferred over there, and then Tati maybe being up top. Like, how great would that be if you want to see, like, Aaronson to Tati for the goal, and then they all run over and celebrate with their American manager? That would be fantastic. I would love it. Connor also says there's a rumor that Jack Harrison from Leeds is on the crew radar, but he won't leave Leeds. That would be interesting to see him make a move back. I think he did come up in NYCFC's academy, if that's the right player, Jack Harrison, right? So that would be really interesting to see him come back to America, especially after spending so much time in the Prem. And Dan Geringer says, I was surprised to see Man City pay so much for Jack Grealish last year. Yes, right. That gets into the point I'm trying to make, is like, they are just throwing so much money out there to make sure that other clubs don't get that talent, or that they're trying to invest in these players, right? And they can maybe amortize some of their losses over the term of the contract. In fact, that is how you have to do it by FIFA financial fair play laws, which I just learned from a YouTube channel called It's Just Soccer. Go find Jake Landau's channel. It's just called, or it's called Soccer. He used to be FIFA America. Now he updated his brand. And I learned a little bit about contract amortization over there. So check that out. And as well as all his other content. But it's like, well, you know, if we sign him to some crazy long deal, then we can also pay the extra money because it's amortized over all these years, and then we'll loan him out and those loan teams will pay off some of it. So maybe there is an accounting aspect to it, but when it comes down to just the number of dollars that you're going to pay in a transfer fee, Dan, you're absolutely right. Like, that Jack Grealish deal was so huge that I think it's kind of hurting all these other bigger clubs, because people are holding out. They know you got the money. They know these clubs have the money. And Connor with a final comment, Matthew Hoppe and Josh Sargent also linked to the crew. Interesting. A lot of good crew news. Make sure you go subscribe to Connor's channel to get all that. Actually, Connor, I had heard some kind of, not a rumor, it was more of a kind of a pipe dream for some fans, that Josh Sargent's from the St. Louis area, so that they would love to see him be the first DP for St. Louis when they come into the MLS. So that would be a really kind of fun thing to see. Last bit of MLS news before we take our halftime break here. LAFC, they did it. It was rumored. It kind of came out of nowhere. LAFC signs Italian defender Giorgio Chiellini. Yes, that Chiellini, the guy who's been playing with major club Juventus for the last 17 years. Giorgio Chiellini signs a TAM contract through 2023 with LAFC. He's a 37-year-old center back who, just coming to MLS and LAFC, raises the profile of both. He also is going to provide some excellent experience and help probably train and coach up a lot of these young defenders that LAFC have. Additionally, he's reliable. He provides depth as LAFC is looking to make a cup run this year under first-year manager Steve Cherundolo. And Cherundolo seemed pretty high on him. And to me, that's another good sign, right? You've got a first-year coach who goes out and signs a really high-profile player, also a little bit of a risk associated with signing a 37-year-old coming into MLS, who's going to have to adjust to the MLS travel schedule, flying all over the continent, as well as playing on all sorts of different surfaces throughout the league. They still have two games against Seattle. So, you know, they still got to play on that turf up there, and who knows what the playoffs will bring. But it looks to be a good move for LAFC as they shore up their roster in anticipation of a playoff run, maybe even a Shield run, right? Also, just a little knowledge here, MLS knowledge. TAM in the year 2022, each club gets $2.8 million of TAM. And according to the MLS rules, clubs may use the funds to sign a new player, provided his salary and acquisition costs are more than the maximum salary budget charge. So depending on the other players on the roster that they have attributed, or that they've allocated some targeted allocation money, TAM, to, Chiellini could make a few million dollars over the next season and a half with LAFC. And in fact, transfermarket.com, that great website, actually has him valued right now at 1.5 million euros. So right around that TAM signing. So what do y'all think about these signings? What do y'all think about these transfers? Any other rumors that you have heard? Let us know. Definitely shoot some tweets at us at SOP Soccer, at Wife Kids House. Email us at sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. We'll work that into our next week's recap, or, you know, we'll try to find some articles to retweet out throughout the course of the week. Brother BKL says that's a second Italian who is coming to the MLS. That's right. Lorenzo Insigne heading north of the border up to TFC. Connor, I think you're right on this one too, man. Chiellini is at the end of his prime, might retire in a year or two. He still has a little bit of tread on those tires, so we'll see what he can do. I really hope this is not a regression. I don't think it is. I don't think the league would want its, you know, one of its great franchises in LAFC to sign these retirement type players again and just continue that stereotype. We don't need another Gonzalo Higuain problem on the West Coast here. So, guys, that is taking us to halftime here. We're about a half hour into the show. We're probably even a little past halftime. We're in an extra into stoppage time here in the first half. So on the YouTube side of things, we are going to take a quick break. So go ahead, you know, head to the washroom, refill your drinks, take a breather. I'm going to try and, you know, soothe my throat a little bit with some Skira Icelandic spring water here. But on the podcast side of things, you're going to hear a read from our sponsor, Skira. And then you're going to get an update from our good friend and longtime supporter of the show, John Donovan. He's going to talk a little bit about FIFA because we're in the international break. And he's also going to give you kind of a look ahead at the Chicago Fire. So stay tuned for all of that. And we will be back in about a minute on the YouTube side of things for the second half of the show, everyone.
This MLS Weekly Recap is sponsored by Skira Icelandic spring water, available at your local 7-Eleven. Icelandic for clear, Skira water comes from a spring in a nature preserve in Iceland with naturally low mineral content. This isn't your average water. Clearly, yes, pun intended, it's one of the best. Get some Skira today at your local 7-Eleven.
Nick, John Donovan here covering the MLS and the Chicago Fire. I realize there hasn't been a game for 2 weeks, but I just wanted to get something out just in case you do a podcast. Nick, it kind of disgusts me, this FIFA scheduling. You know, in the middle, how many sports in the middle of a season are postponed for three quarters of a month so that our national team can play against Granada? I mean, games that mean absolutely nothing on the table, nothing. We're suspending a whole league of club soccer for FIFA, which, you know, I don't think there's a more corrupt sporting group in the world other than FIFA. I mean, remember the old director of FIFA? I mean, just putting games all over the world and stealing so much money. But this suspension of the MLS league for 3 weeks is, in my opinion, just way out of hand. I mean, think of it. If the Fire got... The two guys that would have left the Fire for their national teams are Navarro and Shakira, and neither one of them are really making big impacts on the squad. I would like to see some of the guys off the bench, and I'm sure there's a lot of teams that have, you know, they get one or two guys. I mean, if any team would be hurt, it would be Dallas, who would be hurt the most by losing two of their real good scorers. But this suspension in the middle of the season for 3 weeks is ridiculous. So that's my rage today. I will never understand this. But, you know, going back to the Fire, Nick, I'm going to say something that I think I'm crazy when I say this. But, you know, the Fire have the talent. I've been kind of looking at other squads. They play DC and Houston the next two games, which, you know, not too tough competition. I mean, the way they've lost this first half of the season, I mean, all these cards and stupidity on the field, that's coaching errors. That's coaching when you guys got, you know, get all these first yellow cards and then subsequently they're off the field. We've got probably four or five games in this first part of the season that we could have tied or won if the players could have controlled themselves. So, shame on the management. I mean, really, shame on the management of the squad. And that would be from Heinz, who gave up to Jordi Mihaljevic, which I will never forget. It was one of the worst trades that I've seen in the system in the many years for the Chicago Fire. And he's literally, you know, his move, some of the guys he let go last year should not have been let go. They could have used them this year. But, you know, it's just odd. And then he brings in Ezra, and You know, I was not for Ezra early on in the season, but once he was named coach, I was 100% behind him. But he has made some really errors. Not number one, he has not been able to coach patience on the field, good sportsmanship. He just has not been able to coach that. It's bizarre. But the Fire had been hurt more by unacceptable behavior than probably any team this year. But when you look at the two guys that they named to the squad, that just came to the squad, Torres and Mueller, they create a lot of different opportunities for Ezra. I mean, if I was Ezra, and I wish I was Ezra to tell you the truth, I would take Shakira. You know, when he played out in the Premier League, he was a winger. He was not a midfielder. Why they've got an $8,700,000 a year player playing the midfield, which he's never played. He plays out on the wing. Why they brought him in there is beyond me. He's good. He breaks down defenses from the wing, but not from the middle. If I was Ezra, again, which I wish I was, I would put Gutierrez and Torres in those positions and then put Shakira out wide. You know, the Fire, if they can light up a couple of games in these next four games, I'm going to call this season the next four games. If they win three of the four, then I believe they have a good shot at making the playoffs. They have the talent. You know, they had a couple of signings that, you know, I wondered about when the signings were made. The Chesnov from Germany, you know, he had a lot of leg injuries over in Germany, and that's probably why they didn't keep him in the Bundesliga. He was breaking down in that league, and he's doing that here. He's missed four or five games, and we cannot underline this. We cannot have Carlos Thuram back there and expect him to play many games in a row without a breakdown. I mean, Omsberg, good. Navarro, I think he's improved quite a bit. Their defense is solid, but they need the German player back there to keep it together. It's, you know, back to front. The defense is way improved over last year. The midfield, you know, he keeps throwing Federico Navarro on the field, and what Navarro has outright lost two games for us with cards and all the other stuff, and he looks like he doesn't know what's happening. That last penalty kick against Toronto, I've watched that thing, Nick, over and over, and that was a penalty in anybody's league. He was inside the box. The guy didn't move his shoulder towards Navarro. It was an absolute penalty. And that's how many games have we lost because of Navarro's mistakes. I would have Pineda out there, although he was hurt at the end, or any other midfielder than Navarro. And then, you know, he makes these strange, this season, first half of the season, he put Bornstein on the wing, and the guy is a defense guy, and he's 38 years old. Yes, he did have one lucky goal, but obviously that has not worked for him. And then he puts in this guy, Espinosa, who, you know, he looks like a soccer player. I'm sure he talks like a soccer player, but he doesn't play like a soccer player. He was the guy that lost against Omaha. He had two incredible screws up against Omaha where they lost the game. He's had every time that Ezra has put him on the field, nothing has happened. Balls flying all over the place. Doesn't seem to know his positioning. You know, you got to try some of these younger guys out that are playing for the Fire too. This kid Penn up front, he's scoring. You know, they've got some decent, I've watched them on the stream. They've got some decent midfielders. You got to put them out there, and because Navarro is going to kill you as the season goes on. We got two players on the field that I would not test my game against. It would be Carlos Terran and Federico Navarro. They're both cards waiting to happen. So, but if this team, if he can come out, Ezra, and he can calm down this team and coach it on the field, they might have a chance. Now, one, you know, I've listened to a lot of podcasts, and they were talking about the curse of the Fire. And, you know, for 13 years, they have been cursed. And all you got to do is say Klopas. The Fire are playing with the curse of Klopas. Okay, Nick, I hope we have a podcast. I'm looking forward to the season starting up again. Have a good evening. Take care, Nick.
Thanks for that Chicago Fire update, John. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, everyone. We are back with the second half of our weekly recap here on SOP Soccer Central, covering all things MLS and American soccer. Again, I want to say thanks to John for his latest segment, which you can hear on the podcast side of things. So make sure you go subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, download the episode. Make sure you tune in at the halfway mark to hear all of John's takes. Usually he's focused on the Chicago Fire, but he gives us a good look ahead during the international break, as well as a few comments about FIFA in there. John, appreciate the passion, man. And I know you're as excited as I am for Chicago Fire to get back to Soldier Field June 18th against DC United. A very winnable game for the Fire, but no easy game by any sense of the imagination. Also, you know, the Fire played their best stretch of soccer, the four games leading into the international break, despite only taking, I want to say, a point out of those games. But they come up against some winnable games, DC, Houston, Philadelphia, and San Jose. So if the Fire keep playing at that level, and hopefully Jerdan Shaqiri is not have a serious injury and can get back with the Fire, they could go on a little bit of a run and maybe move up a couple spots in the Eastern Conference table. Also, thank you again to Skira Icelandic Spring Water, available at your nearest 7-Eleven. Go try it. Had I been drinking it all weekend, I wouldn't sound like this. It will refresh you. It will refresh your voice. I can promise you that. And again, just a reminder, everyone, make sure you've already liked the video, subscribed to the channel. Definitely join as a paid subscriber. You get weekly videos for Mike's betting picks and predictions. And look, if I know Mike, I've known the guy many, many years. He is actually betting the games that he tells you to bet. He would not put all the time and effort into making these videos if he did not actually throw a few bucks down himself on these games. So if he's confident, like I say, go for it. Again, we're not telling you how to invest, how to strategically invest, how to spend your money. But this isn't just something Mike's doing for a sponsorship gig or just to put stuff out there. Like he's actually betting on these games himself. And speaking, though, if you do want to support our channel other than just joining and subscribing, send us a super chat in your YouTube comments. You can absolutely, send a dollar super chat, 99 cents. Any little thing helps. $5 if you love it, right? 10, 20 bucks if you are so generous and you love what we're doing here at SOP Soccer Central. And every dollar that we make, we reinvest into the show, right? For graphics, for design, software, equipment, we reinvest into it. This isn't going into our pockets at all. Now, with all of that being said, let's take the show international here, right? We got a taste of it with John's podcast break there. But looking at some of the international friendlies that the U.S. has played recently, they defeated Morocco 3-0 on June 1st and played Uruguay 0-0. On June 5th. So a couple good results, right? I think that win against Morocco is excellent. Another World Cup team, a very good team coming out of the African Confederation, and a team that the U.S. had to find ways to break them down and score goals, right? And they did it. It was great. The Uruguay game, though, I don't think anyone really played well. And I actually had a conversation online with someone about Paul Areola's play, and they're like, oh, he played terrible that game. Well, I think everyone didn't play up to snuff against that Uruguay game, right? I think they were kind of looking ahead maybe to CONCACAF Nations League, or, you know, Berhalter was maybe trying to look at some other lineups. And I'm going to get into that comment in just a minute. So I wouldn't take too much out of the Uruguay game. I don't think anyone played themselves into a starting spot come World Cup time, but maybe some people have actually kind of played themselves out of the lineup. One of those guys being Jordan Morris, because he was a player that relies on speed and strength. I don't think he has the technical ability to beat guys one-on-one on a dribble, but he has used his speed to get into the channels and play dangerous balls, as well as be a physical presence in the attacking third. If he has slowed down a little bit because of all the soccer he's been playing with Seattle and the USMNT, not to mention the injury he had last year, if he starts slowing down a little bit, he is not going to be as effective as a player and may not find himself on Berhalter's World Cup squad. Now, also, aside from these international friendlies, the U.S., as well as all the other CONCACAF teams, are playing in the CONCACAF Nations League. So we're going to run down some scores quickly here that took place from June 3rd to June 12th, and I'll give you a few a few pointers and a few tips of things that I've noticed, and some reminders as well as what is Nations League. So you had Curaçao fall to Honduras 1-0. Suriname and Jamaica play to a 1-1 draw. El Salvador beats Grenada 3-1. Costa Rica beats Martinique 2-0. Costa Rica in the World Cup playoff coming up. Honduras playing Curaçao and losing 2-1. Grenada draws El Salvador 2-2. That's a great result for Grenada. They may be, I hate to say it this way, but they may be the worst team in their league, in the Nations League. So for them to grab a point against El Salvador is a great game. Panama beats Martinique 5-0. Canada rolls Curaçao 4-0. USA, if you didn't already see, a Jesus Ferreira 4-goal game, and then Areola added on another one. They beat Grenada 5-0. Mexico beat Suriname 3-0. Martinique and Panama also played to a 0-0 draw. And actually, Honduras and Canada, should be a good game, are kicking off tonight, I think 9 o'clock Central. So right about the time we wrap up here, I'll make sure you guys can get the kickoff for that one. A couple things that stand out to me are the Curaçao scores, right? Curaçao has that great game against Honduras, but then is goalless in their initial game against Honduras, doesn't score against Canada, and Curaçao was kind of on the up last year. They, as you know, have a lot of relationship with the Netherlands, so there are a lot of Dutch citizens who are also citizens of Curaçao who may not be able to get into the Dutch ranks, right? And so they come and transfer and play internationally for Curaçao. So Curaçao is on the up, and it's surprising to see that they go scoreless in two games and then end up with 2 goals away at Honduras. So that kind of stood out to me. Just some general talk about Nations League, just so we can refresh everyone's memory here. The Nations League was created to give teams more competition and more consistent competition, right? You know, for example, why would any like top 20 FIFA ranked club want to go play these Caribbean and Central American nations, right? What would it do for Canada, US, and Mexico to go play Grenada, Suriname, Martinique, like in friendlies? It would do nothing for them, right? It wouldn't help them develop, and it wouldn't help them schedule other opponents. So FIFA and CONCACAF, in an attempt to really bolster all soccer nations, right, set up these Nations League. The one in Europe has been very successful, and the one in CONCACAF was patterned after the one in UEFA. So now you have these smaller nations playing meaningful games and having development opportunities and getting players to be scouted, getting coaches the experience in these games. And on top of it, like the money coming in from these CONCACAF Nations League games can then go to help develop leagues, right? So I think it's excellent that they do this. And FIFA has also tried to have some other international friendly windows so a nation like the U.S. can, on the one hand, play a Grenada and then also go schedule a game against an Uruguay, right? Also, the Nations League in CONCACAF is broken down into 3 separate leagues. And let me see if I can pull that up here on the screen for you all to see. It's broken down into 3 different leagues, and each league has groups in it, right? And there's promotion and relegation within those leagues. So taking a look quickly at what we have right now, we have League A, which is the top of the Nations League, the best teams. It was originally pulled in from the teams in the hexagonal World Cup qualifying, and then those who won a Caribbean and Central American playoff. So you got Group A, Jamaica, Mexico, a couple of big teams, guys we see in the hex and the octagonal, right? And then Suriname, Panama, Costa Rica, again, your big name CONCACAF teams, or bigger, maybe not the biggest, playing in a group with Martinique. Canada, Honduras play in a group with Curaçao, and El Salvador and the U.S. play in a group with Grenada. So you have nations like Grenada, Curaçao, Martinique, and Suriname who are getting games against big teams. So they get that experience, they get that exposure. And the goal, again, being that maybe you get a few guys from Suriname to get recruited into USL League One or USL Championship or something like that, right? And then they can help develop and grow their team. Maybe you get an assistant coach or two who gets a deal with an MLS club or a Canadian Premier League club. Anyway, so that is what is going on over there in CONCACAF Nations League. And I'll just throw up some of these last scores here so you guys can kind of see what has been going on as we run down the rest of my notes here. All right, so why Nations League? And again, it was for what we just discussed. It does not directly affect World Cup qualifying. That's what the Gold Cup had helped with that while FIFA transitioned its ranking system. But now World Cup qualifying is based on FIFA rankings, right? So the top, I think it is the top six or the top eight teams on the FIFA rankings are going to go right into that qualification, that octagonal, or it'll be the top six, and then there'll be a couple other teams that get in based on some other performances. I have to read up on that a little bit more myself. But really, it doesn't directly affect it. But how else can you move up the rankings, especially within your confederation, if you don't play teams in your confederation, right? So it all kind of funnels up towards the World Cup, and hopefully that money all funnels back down to the other teams. To kind of give you a sense, talking about rankings, right now, the FIFA rankings, according to transfermarket.com, Mexico is 9th, USA is 15th, Costa Rica and Canada, 31st and 38th, Panama and Jamaica, 61 and 64, and El Salvador and Curaçao, 74 and 79. So those are your top eight ranked CONCACAF nations. For comparison, Grenada is 170th. Trinidad and Tobago, that boogeyman for the U.S., is 103rd. Suriname is 141st. And then you've got Haiti, Guatemala, Honduras, anywhere from 82 to 118. So that's kind of where these Nations League teams fall. The one thing I did find interesting when looking at transfer market and FIFA rankings, they also rank it by value of the players on the roster. So if you want to go check that out, go to transfermarket.com, no E, transfermarked.com. And the USMNT actually ranks 26th in the world based on value of the players on their roster at 232.82 million. England is number one in that category. No surprise there, 1.45 billion. But one thing of note is they're looking at like the most recent rosters. So Ricardo Pepi's $20 million transfer and his salary is not in the US's pool because he's not on the current roster. So keep that in mind as you're looking at things. So that was a fun little bit. So we got a few other comments here that we want to get to. BKL, Nations League equals Gold Cup. Our Red Bull Insider says Gold Cup equals Nations League equals Gold Cup. Not exactly. Totally separate tournaments, guys, but I see what you're saying. Like for a lot of fans, it's World Cup qualifying and it's Gold Cup. This Nations League thing hasn't caught on. It's still kind of foreign. I even said I got to do some reading up to see how it feeds into World Cup qualifying. But it is going to grow. It has definitely helped over in Europe. It has been a very successful tournament. You're seeing a lot more exposure from some of those smaller nations, right? And especially here in the Caribbean where in Central America, where there is tons of talent and they just need to be displayed, right? Connor knows soccer. I only watch Curaçao for Eli Room. Yes, he had an okay game. I watched a little of one of Curaçao's matches, and there was one point where I'm just like, dude, Room, what? Like, he just bobbled the ball or like slapped it down. So I hope he can use some of these Nations League games to stay in good form for the Columbus Crew. Excuse me there. Now, let's get back into the USMNT here, right? And let me see if I had anything I wanted to throw up there. So now we'll minimize this window and just start talking USMNT. There's my pretty face, right? Now, USMNT roster talk. I mean, everyone on Twitter, everyone on YouTube who has a soccer channel is talking about, oh, who's the number nine? Who's the starting goalkeeper? Do we really need Tyler Adams? He's terrible. I'm like, slow down, everybody here, right? I don't want to get into those conversations. Anyone can have those conversations. In fact, everyone is having those conversations. But for people to say you got to bench Tyler Adams and you don't like Jesus Ferreira because of the chances he missed, everyone's just got to slow down here because I'm looking at it from a different perspective. Greg Berhalter is trying to figure out who are the guys that are going to make up his World Cup roster. He is not looking for his best 11. This is a tournament, and tournaments, you don't play your starting 11 typically for three straight games. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be just fatigue and fitness, especially in Qatar and Qatar when they're playing in the middle of a desert. And even though it's November, it's going to be sweltering. Also, Greg Berhalter is a very cerebral, academic kind of coach. Maybe those aren't the right adjectives to use, but he thinks a lot, right? He's definitely going to be playing matchups. So the U.S. is going to be playing Wales, Iran, and England. Three good teams, but three teams with different styles. So he's going to need a variety of player styles on his own roster. So looking at it through that lens, that's what I haven't heard too much talk about yet on the various YouTube channels and Twitter feeds and all that sort of thing. So let's look at it through that lens, that he's got to have a variety of players. So thinking of that with the number nine discussion, the striker discussion, I think you're going to bring Ferreira, who's been on a tear all year in MLS. And then, you know, four goals against Granada is nice. Yes, it is Granada, but four goals against Granada, right? He's getting on the end of things. Plus, if you keep Paul Areola on that roster, which I hope they do, I like Areola's game. And again, he brings a variety to the wing position. Him and Ferreira both play for Dallas together. They have a chemistry, right? So that can't be understated going into a World Cup where you may not have as much prep time coming off the end of an MLS season as you would like. A different schedule because the World Cup got moved to November to accommodate the Qatari weather. That chemistry could not be understated. So maybe we do. I think Ferreira is going to be on the roster. Then who is the other guy? Who is the other player, right? Maybe Zardes. He has a similar profile of how he likes to play as far as like getting in the right position in the box. But Zardes is more of a link up and passing striker. You've got Josh Sargent, who makes a lot of runs, but who kind of been playing on the wing a little out of position at times. And we'll have to see what form he gets back into at the start of the fall season. You've got Daryl Dike, who is a big physical presence, but is he technical enough to provide a passing style 1-2 guy? I don't know. But again, these are all the different profiles that we need. So maybe against Wales, we need a big physical body. Maybe against England, we need someone who can break down their defense like someone in Zardes' style, or Haji Wright, who is more of an all-around player than excelling in one area, at least in my opinion. I could be wrong. I haven't studied Haji Wright too much. So looking at it in that lens, I would fully expect to see Ferreira and, hey, even Ricardo Pepi, if he can get back into form, right? Ferreira and Pepi would be a great, you know, if they ever do switch to a 4-4-2 kind of combination, having those two guys up top. And if that's even an option come the World Cup. If not, I don't think we'll see Pepi. I think it would be great to have DK as a giant physical body. But again, he's got to be scoring goals for his club team before he's going to get another look. Haji Wright, also a physical player. Brandon Vasquez, if he keeps banging him in for Cincinnati, another physical player, that would be a good complement to Jesus Ferreira. Again, using that variety of player lens, let's look at the wingers and midfielders. You've got Pulisic, Reyna, McKennie, and Musa, guys who can work off the dribble, which means you need a guy like Areola and Weah on the wings, or Aronson, who can just take that space on the wings. You also have guys like De La Torre and Tyler Adams, who can just run for days and be kind of play that traditional eight role, right? Where they're more of a defensive mid player who can then also progress the ball up the field. So I think you will see De La Torre because he is the perfect backup for Tyler Adams. Again, all these guys are going to be needed in these matches in Qatar. And especially if the U.S. advances into the knockout rounds, which I think will happen and I think is the expectation. So you're going to need a variety of players. There's definitely going to be two or three guys left off the roster that everyone's going to say, this is ridiculous. Greg Berhalter doesn't know what he's doing. And then you're going to see two or three guys who make the roster who people are going to say, aha, I told you they should have been here the whole time. I was the only one back in the day that supported them. So you're also going to see changes, probably, you know, four or five guys within starting lineups among the first group stage games. That's my anticipation. Additionally, if the U.S. advances, they're going to be matched up with Qatar, Ecuador, Netherlands, or Senegal. Those are their pool of opponents out of Group A that they will meet in the knockout round. So again, completely different styles of play. One last thought on this before we kind of wrap things up and let everyone get over to the Canadian game that's going to kick off. People are saying that Jordan Morris and Paul Ariola and Aaron Long all played themselves out in this last window. I might agree for Morris, like I said earlier, but I think Ariola and Long can still serve a purpose, especially with the Miles Robinson injury. Remember, he tore his Achilles. He's out in for good, probably will not make the World Cup, most likely will not make the World Cup. And Aaron Long can provide some depth. Greg Berhalter trusts him, and he seems to have a pretty good rapport with the team. Also, I think Paul Ariola is deceptively quick, plays really good crosses, and has that chemistry with Ferreira. One last note for all our Canadian fans before they go off and tune into the Canada game. The TFC, as I mentioned in the opening, did end up winning the 2020 Canadian Championship after drawing Hamilton Forge 1-1 and then winning on PKs 5-4. So TFC gets that penalty kick monkey off their back. They get their eighth Canadian Championship, and TFC and Reds fans can rejoice. They can put some more hardware back on their shelf. So let's see a few more comments here. Brother BKL says Belgium is second. That's right, with 1,827 points. Again, FIFA changed the rankings to a point-based system. So whoever, depending on how you play, who you play, what their standing are, how you win, it breaks down points. Think of the old College Bowl system, right? But hopefully a little better implementation. Jay Jardim says, LOL, damn penalties. Yes, Jay, anytime there's good TFC news, I think of you. Anytime there's bad TFC news, I also think of you. But yeah, I would stress out anytime they took a penalty. I kind of laughed that it was Kerr that missed after watching him just net one against Chicago in that game shortly before the international break, where TFC comes and beats Chicago 3-2. So who knows what'll happen in the future for TFC. Hopefully they're just winning games outright. Hopefully with Insigne, they don't need to go into PKs anymore. But fans, friends, we are approaching an hour mark here. So I want to leave you with the final thought of enjoy the international break. Enjoy what's left of it as we get back into the MLS games, as we wind up some of these Nations League group games. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, follow on Twitter at SOP Soccer and at Wife Kids House. Super chats, send them in. If you know what, if you want to talk sponsorships or other deals, please email Mike, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. We couldn't be doing what we're doing without our current sponsor, Skira Icelandic Spring Water, as well as Mike's betting sponsors over in his betting videos. So if you want to help our channel grow and you want to expand and grow your product and get some influence in the American soccer community, reach out to us and let's try to work something out, whether it's on the podcast, on YouTube, on Twitter, however you want to do it. I want to thank everyone, especially to all of our viewers and listeners. Jay, it's great to see you again. Brother BKL is always coming in fast and furious with the updates. Connor, good luck on your next live stream. Dan, it was a pleasure. John Donovan, thank you so much for sending in your podcast clip. But especially thanks to Mike for bringing me back in and letting me do what we do, even with this hoarse voice. And God bless you all for listening to me for the last hour scratch my way through another SOP Soccer Central update. Guys, it's been great. We look forward to seeing you all next week again. Thanks, everyone.